Oh, I have that.
Okay, we are live.
Good live!
There you go. Perfect.
All right, man, kick us off.
Okay, well, let's start it with our brand new theme song. Welcome to the, is this the fourth episode of Shop Talk? The fourth episode of Shop Talk with your hosts, Dave Rupert and Chris Coyer. Say hello, Chris.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Shop Talk.
And today we have a really awesome show with two completely special guests from the Kick Awesome Show. Guys, we have Jonathan Longnecker and Nate
hello.
Croft. Say hello, guys.
Hey,
everybody.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I personally am really excited about the idea of crossover episodes. Are you guys familiar? Yeah. Like when you are watching like CSI and the cast from the other CSI comes in and you're like, oh man, this is the best ever.
It's so
exactly
CSI.
How I feel right now. So,
totally,
how are
man.
They going to solve this mystery?
It's more crime than I can bear.
I always thought Longnecker and Croft would be like a good, like a high-end brand of clothing or something. It's just such a cool combination of last names, you know.
Long you actually Necker have a custom tailor shop in the south of London.
Well, then you're way ahead of me.
It could also be a really awesome cop show, like just like
Longnecker and Croft.
We need to work on that. Let's make a video. Let's
do it. All right, guys. So we're gonna start out. I have a few shout outs to do, and then we're just gonna press right along here so we can make the best use of our hour possible. So that intro music is by a guy named Chris Taylor. I wanted to give a shout out to him because in addition to recording that for us, he said like, oh, also I did this cool JavaScript thing, and it's the URL for it is at performerjs.org. And the kind of the idea behind it is kind of like a library that does design patterns for you, like tabs and like opening modal boxes and stuff. But the idea is that you just you kind of set it and forget it kind of thing. You just add CSS classes to things, and that's how you control the behavior. It's pretty interesting in that it's kind of an early project, and I'd like to, like, instead of dwell on it right now, have everybody go check it out, and maybe we can talk about it in more detail later, because I feel like there's going to be some things that people like about it and don't like about it, and it's interesting to see these kind of, these kind of one-man big projects like that. So let's everybody check out performerjs.org, and then maybe we'll talk about it next time. Another one is from Andreas Hederich, who sent us a question about how we might handle noise in CSS. You know, that's like a trendy thing to like put little, like, I don't know, noisy backgrounds on stuff. And while simultaneously asking us about how we might handle noise, he sent in a JS fiddle of how one way that he's done it in the past, which is use multiple backgrounds of CSS and have this like super noisy image as the bottom layer of a CSS 3 multiple backgrounds, and then put colors on top of that to kind of tone down the noise and tone the color of it. And I was like, dude, that's pretty cool. Like, you should just keep doing that because I like it. So I wanted to shout out to that. I'm going to put it in the show notes because it's just impossible for me to blab out a URL online. But those are the shout outs for the day. Dave, do you have like a, I don't know, some kind
of way to... We don't have any hot drama for this week. Sadly, I dug and even tried to pick some fights and couldn't come up with anything. But worth noting, the guys from the Kick Awesome Show, your company, 47 Media, is that right? That you guys just relaunched?
Yeah.
Yes, yesterday.
Tell us a little bit about that. What'd you do? What'd you do to your website?
We made it better.
Yeah, so our old site was like 4 years old, which is, an eternity in internet years. So I don't know. When did we start talking about this? Like 2010, we wanted to start redoing it. Nothing happened in 2010. We tried again in 2011 and didn't actually get started until probably, I don't know, the end of the summer, something like that.
Yeah, something like September when we finally began in earnest.
Yeah, and it was kind of, you know, I mean, the site is how we make a living, and so it was kind of scary to have to go in and redo all of that. It was a little intimidating, but we pushed through. We, you know, we redid it. We redesigned it, rebuilt it from the ground up. It's completely responsive. It's all HTML5, CSS3'd. And we changed the back end a little bit, too. It's built on Expression Engine, and so we changed the way we publish things so it's a little bit easier to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are like the Expression Engine. That's your tool of choice for sure, right? As far as CSS goes.
Yeah, we like it. It's awesome.
I just got an email earlier today of somebody that was just like, "Do you do WordPress theming work?" And I was like, "No, I don't." And I also think that if you're depending on where you are in this project, that you shouldn't be too tied to that. You all know that I'm kind of a WordPress guy. I really quite like WordPress, but I don't really care, really. You know, if you just need a website, that's what you actually need. And you shouldn't be tied to WordPress that early at the point of you don't even have a website yet, don't you think?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know what I need, but I want it to go fast and shiny and awesome.
Yeah, pretty weird. Anyway, it's great work on the site. Everybody check out 47media, FORTY7media.com. And look at the responsiveness is awesome too. Like every little detail is responsive. Even their contact form, you know, has kind of like some text off to the right of the fields, and even the form itself is responsive. So, you know, they got the details right. Good work, fellas.
Thanks. One of the big things for us was like a lot of responsive sites, when they scale down, things just disappear, you know? And so
it's either disappear or go to the bottom. Stuff on the right, and goes to the
top. So I really tried hard to keep almost everything in when it scales down. Things just sort of move around and rework themselves. It was way too much work, but it turned out pretty good. So
totally. I'm excited for the day when CSS regions get more action, because it's kind of like, instead of just push it down, because right now we're still largely dealing with float-based layouts, that we can kind of be like, no, I want this thing to scoot up here, and then you know, split this thing into two parts and put these different places. And responsive design is going to get a lot more interesting when we have better CSS layout stuff to work.
Yeah, I think so. That'll be a really nice development, because right now it just has such a horrible add-on, like afterthought sort of feel to most responsive sites.
Yeah. Speaking of responsive sites, did you guys see the brand new Converge SE? This is hot off the press as well.
You guys are
going to be there, is that right?
Yeah, we're doing a workshop there.
Mm-hmm. Well, a little free press for them, but their site has this dinosaur, a T-Rex, a bionic T-Rex in the background that does some awesome things as you scroll down. I was pretty impressed with it.
I'm pretty sure that's Giovanni's illustration. It looks like his work, and he's just so good.
It's kind of the hotness. Like, when you see a dinosaur on somebody's website, you start thinking, man, like, why doesn't my site have a dinosaur?
I know. We got that covered.
Oh, yeah, you guys lucked out. I'm sitting around, like, kind of, like, slightly upset my website doesn't have a dinosaur on it now.
I would be, too. I think you should think about it really hard. Honestly, you guys, just sit down and think about how cool dinosaurs are. They're, in the past, huge, freaking monstrous lizard. Oh, my God. It was such an awesome time. I just sometimes tear up thinking about dinosaurs.
Those were the days.
This one on the Converge site has like guns and stuff. I mean,
right.
How much cooler can you make dinosaurs? I mean, really.
You put guns on them. That's how.
He's got an eye laser sight thing going on.
All right.
All right. Well, let's move on going to some questions.
I thought it was cool.
No, I think we've just exhausted the dinosaur.
Dave usually has a good question to start things out.
Yeah, I'll kick this off. I was doing some research, and did you guys know that Cyndi Lauper knows how to code? And she's really good at doing markup. Because, really? Yeah, because she always puts time after time. She closes her time tags. Come on now.
You need like a noise.
I got it. I got it. Hold on. That's why I bought this thing.
Yes. There you go.
That could also be a trombone, I suppose.
Dave's always good with the joke. All right, let's kick it off. We got a question here from Connor Haining, who says, is web design a good career choice, or is build a website packages turning us obsolete? And I thought it was interesting because we got two or three of these. Here's another one from Tanya Smith, who says, what if people think about website builders like Weebly or Yola and their handling of accessibility? Might they ultimately put us out of business? People are like, you know, I'm just feeling a little bit of emotion like that things like think Yola, Weebly, Squarespace, Verb, even things like, you know, WordPress.com, where you can just go log in and make, you know, a CMS that's hosted in the cloud, or Tumblr or whatever, or even things like Ning or whatever, where you can have build a community site and you have to know nothing about design. And is that hurting us as especially guys like, you know, Paravel and guys like 47 Media who rely on, you know, client work? Are you like feeling the pressure from clients making their own websites or what?
I don't think so. No. It's you know, what those things are great if you, you know, like you're talking about earlier, it's like, I just need a website, you know, and if you don't have budget, you don't really have your idea nailed down, you can get on there and play with it and put your idea live really quickly and see if it has any legs to stand on. And, you know, at that point, you know, sometimes I even recommend people to do that, that, you know, that don't have budget to do, you know, a full-fledged custom handcrafted loving, you know, kind of website. And if they, you know, if they just want to test an idea, it's like, oh, I've got this idea. And it's like, well, great, go, you know, go get yourself a WordPress or a Tumblr or whatever, and, you know, get your idea out there and see if people like it, you know. And if you start making money and, you know, doing well, and you really want to invest back into it, you know, that's the time to talk to a shop that's really going to take care of you and build you something custom.
Yeah. You know, I think for us, that's, well, we are a custom shop. And so we don't, you know, if your job is, you know, going and buying, you know, WordPress or something like that and throwing a skin on it and charging somebody for it, yeah, you should be worried. But if you're, you know, we're doing custom stuff for people because they're outgrowing, you know, what a default install of WordPress or a default install of, you know, Squarespace or whatever those things are. You know, eventually they're going to hit the limits of what they can do themselves. And so, you know, we're kind of at the spectrum of, you know, when somebody needs something custom, you know, that's where we live. And so in that regards, no, I don't see that going away ever. You're always going to need somebody who knows what they're doing, you know?
Right on.
I think it's similar to the, like, why you don't just use Dreamweaver without cleaning out kind of the stuff it makes up is because to some degree the code quality, you don't really know. You're just making a website, and I mean, you're getting the end product. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. as a client of these sites. But but yeah, I think, you know, if you're on the cutting edge, you're able to adapt to changes a lot faster than these companies can implement, you know, let's say responsive web design. I know there's companies catching up on that, and WordPress.com especially, but yeah, like when that hits, you know, you have to change. You have to, your whole job just changed. Surprise. You have to do something different. These companies have, you know, 400 themes. They can't catch up, you know, to the current trends as fast That's as true. You can move. And then on top of that, yeah, I sort of feel like you just got to add value to yourself. Like, why are you better than these guys? You know? So if you're using the exact same theme that they do, then your job's probably in trouble.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion. So.
All right, good answers, guys. I think, you know, that's kind of the where we landed with that was that it's just, you know, maybe for really small, simple sites, that thing's okay because it kind of keeps those clients out of our hair a little bit, or maybe that I'm just adding this. And I think that's good. Like if somebody comes to me with they need this really simple website built, I will send them to Verb in a second. I'll be like, this is great. It's really easy to use. You can build it. And then I'm just, you know, I can concentrate on people that are you know, need more than that. Oh, that was a terrible way to put it, but you know, what a real like for bigger sites and you know, to really nail exactly what someone needs. Web design is complicated, and I'm great that there's simple tools out there to make simple websites, but complicated websites will always need, you know, really skilled people staying on top of their game and doing that type of stuff. No, they're not going to put web designers out of business. We all agree.
At least not now. Maybe 10 years from now, but not now. We're good now.
Okay. 10 years. We're screwed.
Yeah.
All right. We got one from Adam Clark here. Adam Clark wants to know about these 47 media fellows.
Okay. Here we go.
Hey, guys. My name's Adam. A bit of a non-technical question here for John and Nate. I love the personality you guys have put into 47 media. But a lot of agencies and freelancers tend to set a fairly serious tone for how they represent themselves. But you guys have kind of done the opposite of that and come across as very fun and lighthearted. And I wanted to know how your potential clients respond to that. Do you feel like your personality affects the amount and type of clients who come to you? Thanks, guys.
Well, that's a good question. Yes.
No, yeah, you know, I think we decided that when we launched our other site 4 years ago, I mean, we decided then we were going to be ourselves. And that includes being goofy, obviously. So, but yeah, I mean, it really does. It's like a pre-filter for clients that get us and, you know, want to get stuff done and have great work done, but still have fun at the same time.
Yeah. I think, you know, he asked, you know, does it affect the kind of work that we get and the kind of clients we get? It really does. And intentionally so, like John was saying, you know, we want to be real upfront with people. Like we will build you a fantastic website, but we will, you know, and we're not going to synergize your paradigm or, you know, we're not those kind of guys, you know, and we're going to be upfront. You know, we're just, we're a couple of guys that like to have fun and make cool websites.
There you go. So if you're in the business of selling bolts and your corporate color is gray, and your corporate font is Helvetica, don't come to 47 Media. You're not fun enough.
Not unless they want to change it.
Oh, there you go.
I'll take it a step further and go on record saying I find it weird when it's an agency I know is of like one or two guys and or it's like one guy and they use the royal we on their copy.
Right.
They're like, we strive to provide the best solutions at the integral level of your corporate. And you're just like, dude, I've hung out with you. You have more personality than that.
Yeah. So I didn't meet the rest of the we.
Yeah. Who are those guys?
But, you know, I mean, we believe in that kind of stuff even for our clients. I mean, you know, any shop or any product that has something that makes you remember it is going to do better than something boring, you know, with all the lame copywriting and stuff. So, you know, our philosophy sort of trickles down to our clients' philosophy too, as much as we can make it trickle down.
Yeah. So you feel like you attract then that clientele?
Yeah, we do. And you know, the Kick Awesome show, you know, I think people make purchasing decisions emotionally, and a big part of why we put ourselves out there so much is that so that people feel like they know us personally. Because I think that's a big deal. I mean, you've got all these sites, and like you said, they're super impersonal. And if you don't really know like who that person is and what they're like, you're going to be less inclined to actually do work with them, you know, as opposed to someone you've actually seen their face and seen them talking. That's why we think video is pretty powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be hard for someone to hire you guys and not know you a little bit, especially, you know, your website is just, especially now you come to it, it's just your two big mugs staring right at you in the face.
That is true, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this particular redesign, we were more comfortable, like, because we did start out, we did start out that, like, we're going to do those big corporate jobs and we're going to be that we, you know, but we found out very quickly that was awful. So, like, the more we built the old size, like, yeah, we're going to be ourselves. And this time around, we've become really comfortable with the fact that we're just goofy and weird.
Yep.
And we're just going to roll with it. So, you know, it's not like, you know, welcome to 47 Media. We do businessing. You know, it's big goofy. You know, it's big goofy grins, and you know, and you do. You just, we want to. You know, most of our clients, we end up, you know, like wanting to hang out with them, you know, mm-hmm. and that's the kind of people that we want to attract. And just being yourself right from the get go is going to do, you know, it's certainly going to like pre-qualify your leads based on personality and like, oh, these guys are retarded. I'm not working with them. Or like, all right, they're not stuffy. We're going to do the work. It's going to be great. We're going to have a good time. And, you know, it just pre-qualifies people at a whole nother level, regardless of budget, you know, and all the other pre-qualifications that we tend to do, you know, as designers and web shops, you know, trying to qualify leads and all that sort of thing. It's another level of that, not just like, hey, can you afford me, but are you cool to work with? I mean, like when my phone rings and it's you, am I going like, oh, it's that guy again? Or like, oh, sweet. You know, that's Josh from Car People. All right. Hey, what's going on? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I will say too, I mean, this is what works for us. This is who we are. You know, don't try to be like us if you're not goofy, because it's not going to work and you're not going to enjoy it. You know, like if you really like, you know, being, you know, like wearing a suit and like, you know, coming across as super professional, if that's what you really like, you know, do that and enjoy it. Just make sure you be yourself.
Totally. Totally.
Good stuff, guys. I would hire you.
Sweet.
Sweet.
Let's move into Baylor Ray's question about approaching design. I feel like that's a good next one to play there, Dave.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, here we go.
What does somebody that's got more experience with building websites and designing websites think about the whole idea that I've seen a lot of people talk about lately, where just design your website in the browser? Don't even start with Photoshop. Don't create a mock-up. I mean, maybe go in and create like a rough draft, but for the most part, just go straight into your web browser and kind of work with things there, straight with CSS and the markup. And I was wondering, what does somebody with more experience think about that? Because personally, the way I see it is, when you're designing a website, you're not just merely trying to get, okay, this is what my fonts look like, and I want to have this background color over here. But there's a lot of things like trying to align stuff and make sure everything's pretty, has a good flow and stuff. So I was wondering, what does somebody with more experience think?
Okay, so designing in browser. Mm-hmm. Anyone have any thoughts? What Nate? Do you guys do at?
I'll take 47? It. I'll take one, and then I'll pass it off. Okay.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right. You still to this day start in Photoshop. I like Photoshop. I think it's a good tool, and I'll tell you why. And it's because I feel more creative there. And I feel just like I'm not like constrained by HTML and CSS and thinking about how I'm going to efficiently write this code. And I know this is like an outdated concept, but I feel like when I'm in HTML and CSS plan, I'm thinking left brain like, and when I'm in Photoshop, I keep that right brain thing where I'm just thinking about like what would look cool and stuff like that. And then, so I'm working in Photoshop and I get a pretty cool design going, then I get out of it as soon as I can. So I start in Photoshop, and then as soon as I have something kind of cool going on and I think I can work with this, then I don't dwell in Photoshop with all the tiny, tiniest details. I get out of Photoshop and move to the web. So that's what I do.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
You know, as far as like designing in the browser and designing for, you know, like in Photoshop, where we actually do most of our designing in Illustrator, which is, I know we're kind of strange in that way, but you know, I think that the separation really helps. It helps me especially because designing in the browser seems not to be about really designing, but immediate productivity. It's like I can see what's happening, you know, I'm there, and I think, you know, Chris is right. You know, like when I'm working in Illustrator or Photoshop, it's about the information layout. It's about, does this feel, does this flow? I can separate the two things a lot better where, okay, I'm focusing on, you know, what I need to do, what I want the user to do, what I want them to feel, how am I trying to lead their actions? How am I trying to lead their eye through a page, like through visual hierarchy and call outs and whatnot? What do I want them to do? And it allows me to focus on the feel and the intended purpose of that page long before I'm thinking about, you know, like class names and structure and, you know, and responsive layouts or anything like that. I'm keeping the experience, not just in that, you know, very technical user experience as a category, but the overall experience of what the feeling that you get and what the user needs to do, what's most beneficial for them, why they're even here in the first place. It allows me to separate those things into their two distinct areas, and it slows me down. And I like that, and you know, purposely do that because, you know, it's not something I want to rush through. The experience and the feel is not something that I want to skip. You know, now part of the reason that people come to us and like what we do is because we just take the time. You know, we're not the fastest guys in the world because we take the time to understand, you know, the client, their needs, their audience, and what they're trying to accomplish and the feel that they want to give. Okay, I'm out. John?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, feel is huge for us. And, you know, I wrote an article for Net Magazine a while back about how responsive design is boring, and I pissed a bunch of people off. But the whole idea was that, I mean, if you're starting your design, like, mobile first, like its simplest, you know, form, it really worries me that if we start designing in the browser, we start designing for mobile first, we're sort of losing the art and all of it. You know, it's like we're designing for specs and for technical stuff rather than, you know, actual people using it. You know, and how they're going to feel when they hit the site and they see, you know, everything come together, because it's not just one piece. It's all the stuff that has to come together. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, I mean, building a website's hard. There's so many pieces that have to go into it, especially if you're doing, you know, like us, and we're building, you know, all of it from scratch. So yeah, I mean, I can see maybe like web app type stuff that's fairly standard, you know, starting in the browser for those type of things, and maybe sort of like wireframe type setups, you know, where you want to click through something, you know, and see how the flow is in an actual browser. But in terms of actual, you know, the actual design, I'm not a big fan of designing in the browser at all. That's not to say we don't keep designing in the browser once we do it. You know, like Nate said, we use Illustrator a lot, and, you know, but I'm not going to take the time to line up, you know, everything on a perfect grid in Illustrator. I'm just going to get it close to where it feels right, and then let CSS take care of the rest once I get it in there. And I'm constantly tweaking, you know, once we get it into code. But the general feel of it, you know, I think that's got to happen in a graphics program, Photoshop, Illustrator, Fireworks, you know, pick your poison.
Sounds good. I think the graphics programs add your fidelity, sort of what the vibe and the heart of what you're going for. But you can achieve a lot just going in code and riffing and just seeing how things work. Like one of you guys said, wireframing, you can get a quick prototype out in code really nice, but then add a soul to it in Photoshop later, what I would recommend.
Yeah. I think that's what bugs us is the soul.
Yep.
It seems to be lacking. And, you know, it's one of those things. Actually, I'm kind of just looking through the chat window here, and somebody had asked, you know, like, well, you know, it's faster to iterate when you're doing things in the browser. And it kind of made me think, you know, if you take the time on the front end to understand what's going on, you don't have to worry about the iteration so much, and or as quickly. You know, I know that's a big thing in the we build apps world, you know, and like everything's like iterate, design, test, iterate. You know, if you take the time to understand it first and you actually put out a good, usable, well-loved, well-liked version from the start because you did all that work on the front end, There's no need to iterate, you know, like 30 times a day and push code, you know, all day long.
True.
All right, guys. I hope that helped you, Baylor, kind of think about things a little bit. Just, you know, a lot of us, there's no one answer for this. All of us kind of work differently a bit in a way. And I think all of us still use it at least a little bit, and it being Photoshop or Illustrator or whatever.
Fireworks. Fireworks.
Oh, are you a fireworks guy?
I am. Noah and Reagan and Trent from Bearville aren't, but I absolutely am a fireworks guy. I viciously so. It was made to make websites. What more can you ask for? That's why it exists. But
I agree. SurveyMonkey is heavily fireworks, which is interesting. I think it's fine. I don't, you know, if somebody gives me a completed document, I don't even care what it's in, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
All right,
JPEGs, please. Go ahead.
That would work sometimes, you know. Gotta get creative. This is brought to you by, this is the fourth time they've been sponsoring, our best sponsor ever, Super Bear Hug, for the guys at Less Accounting, lessaccounting.com. God, I just saw an ad for them on the internet recently, and it said, let's say, like, bookkeeping is hell and QuickBooks is the devil or something. They kind of focus their advertising on they're kind of like a smear campaign kind of thing against them, but that's fine. Whatever works for them. They, you know, they're not like QuickBooks. It's very different. It's a trimmed back version of that. You can do less with it, hence less accounting, but it's cloud-based bookkeeping software. And if you run a small business, check them out to keep your books in order.
We use it and can recommend it.
Oh, seriously?
Whoa. First-hand account.
Yeah, we really do use it. And we actually came from QuickBooks, so we're kind of that poster child.
That is awesome. I'm going to start using it, dang it. Not even because they're a sponsor, but I need to get my stuff in order. And I have kind of a primitive desktop system, but I need to start getting more serious about how I do that. And I think I'm going to check out Less Accounting.
Much better than an Abacus.
Do it.
Okay. All right, let's keep it going here, folks. Right. We have a quick one that's kind of just show related in a way.
Akshay Arora.
Thank you, Dave. Do you want to read that one?
Yeah, sure. So he asks, I'd like you to guess Windows tools for web designers and developers. Not everyone is on a Mac after all. Smiley face. So do you guys know of Windows tools for web development? Sadly, I'm behind, I think.
I think there's Notepad.
And Notepad++.
Oh, yeah.
I put this in here because I wanted to just say, you know, sorry about that, kind of. We're just, you know, most of the people that I know and work with are Mac people. So when we mention a tool, I could see how that's a little annoying when we are only mention Mac things. But at the same time, the web is the web, and the web works everywhere. So if we talk about HTML and CSS and JavaScript libraries and all that type of stuff, that's irrelevant to what system you're on. So I feel like just because we happen to be Mac people and maybe use TextMate or Coda or whatever as our editor, that's kind of, it doesn't matter. You know, you'll still get stuff out of this show because most of what we talk about is just the web. So whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use Sublime Text too. The chat room is exploding with Sublime Text too. And I'm like, heck yeah, it's so nice.
Oh yeah. And that's cross everything. So there you go.
What's up, guys?
Awesome. Well, sweet. So should we move on to the next question? Sound good?
Yeah, absolutely. Hit it up. Do another one.
Okay, so the next one's from Tom Rogers, and it's a bit of a long one, but we'll listen all the way through. Here we go.
Hey, guys. I'm a big fan of Chris Curtis. I'm a big fan of the show.
Yeah.
So I'm on the show, and it's great to be here, at least virtually anyway.
You made it, Tom.
The question that I have kind of relates to a specific project that I'm working on at the moment, but I think it raises some interesting questions about semantics and browser compatibility that would be interesting to talk about on a show such is shop talk about front end web development. I'd like to get your opinion on it. My question is, when is it a good idea to care about semantics and use HTML5? Basically, the scenario is I'm working on a school project at the moment that's a website, and I'm the website is specifically for my school uses IE8, so the website is specifically to be viewed in IE8, and it's not going to be really viewed on any other sources apart from where I'm viewing it, and it's going to be graded and marked on computers that run IE8. So my question is to you is, I've used HTML5, and I've used particularly media queries to build a mobile version of the website that I can talk about for an accessibility feature. But obviously, none of that will be shown. So my question is there ever not a good time to use progressive enhancement features? If you know they're not going to be used at the time, is that a reason not to use them, or should you always use them just in case they might be used in the future?
Okay, we'll stop right there. But so Tom's question is, his situation is, he has to code out this site that is owned for a school project only for IE8, and he wants to use HTML5 for semantic and accessibility, and he's building like a mobile version. Is there ever a good time to not use HTML5 and all these features? Do you guys have any opinion there?
To not use it?
Yeah, like if your teacher's like, hey, code it for IE8, and like, would you code it in XHTML 4.0.1 or in HTML5?
Personally, I think I would do it just in HTML5, just because if it's going to last more than, you know, a year, you're building on new technology and not something that's becoming antiquated by the day. You know, it's there are things like Modernizer and stuff like that that'll make it cooperate much, much more nicely with HTML5. And personally, I wouldn't give it much of a second thought. Building for specific browser versions is, I don't know, it feels like such a fruitless task in the end. Like, I understand from a school project point of view that, oh, this is what we're doing and we're building it for this particular version. But if you're going forward and making something, you know, that's going to live outside of school, or, you know, just a project, anything that you're doing, or if you plan on building projects, you know, for money, your own company, or building things for other places, you know, having it built on the framework of HTML5 is just going to ensure you better support in the future.
Yeah,
I think Tom is a smart guy, and I think he knows the right answer to this question, and that it's obviously, you know, you did a good job. You know, you're going to be great in IE8, so you have to make it work in IE8. But if you've gone the extra mile, of course that's a good thing, you know? And any teacher worth his salt is going to be like, not going to downgrade you because you added in, because you used Modernizer to make IE8 work better and make it work even better in older browsers than that. I mean, if you get downgraded for that, you friggin' tell them to call up Chris Coyer, and I'll be like, shut up! You're a bad teacher!
Yeah, call into the hotline, and we will rip your teacher a new one, because that's ridiculous.
You know what's up, Tom. Keep making awesome websites that work good in good browsers, and if you got to make it work in IE8, make it work in IE8 for your class or whatever. But no, there's no good time to not make your websites work good in modern browsers. Never.
It's like saying, when is it okay to be not be awesome?
Well, man, even the new version of the boilerplate, like, it makes media queries work with Internet Explorer.
Oh, using Respond?
Yeah, and so, like, if you pull up our site in IE8 and scale the browser, it does the same thing that it does in Safari and Firefox. So,
yeah, it does. So, I mean,
Just start with that, and you should be fine.
Tom specifically said he wrote media queries, but yeah, they don't work in it. So yeah, definitely check out Respond.js. Just as an aside, because this is shop talk, I have an interesting issue on CSS Tricks where I use a CDN, and all of my resources are served up at cdn.csstricks.com, and that is technically a cross-domain issue. So the way that Respond works is it has to pull in your style sheets and your inline styles and stuff through JavaScript. And JavaScript isn't able to just pull in files like that cross domain. So you have to jump through some hoops. So if you know, like on your guys' site, you're probably, I don't know, maybe you do or don't use a CDN, but Respond.js works perfectly well if your CSS files are on the same server that Respond.js is, and you won't have a problem with that. But be aware if you host these things on different domains that it can be a little bit of an issue.
It's good to know. We're all local on our stuff, so
yeah,
we try to keep it simple.
All right, I got one here from Billy Brown. Thanks, Billy. There are many websites out there that warn us against using HTML5 and CSS3. Oh, are there really? I hate those websites. Or that telling us how much of it to use. Okay, so he might be talking about there about the recently released HTML5, please. So Google that. It's pretty cool. It talks about all the different HTML5 and CSS3 features in it and basically gives a value judgment that says use this or don't use this, or use it with the polyfill or use it with the fallback or whatever. It's a really, really great website. So maybe he's talking about that. But then he says, well, but what of JavaScript and its libraries? How much of it should we use on a website and that kind of thing? Like Billy is saying that he hasn't found any sites that like warn against what JavaScript can you use in older browsers. So if anybody has anything on that for Billy.
Well, I'm not a big JavaScript person, but it seems like for the most part, you know, if you use like jQuery or something like that, it's pretty compatible cross browser. As far as I know, I don't do anything crazy with it though.
That's kind of the point is the answer for Billy is that you don't see as much of that stuff for JavaScript because most JavaScript libraries like have that backwards compatibility built in. That's what, you know, in a sense, that's what a library like jQuery is all about, is supporting older browsers. You know, that's why you use it, is to kind of normalize your ability to do stuff. That's kind of like the point of it. So, you know, don't not use jQuery because you're worried about it and not supporting older browsers. Use it because you want to support older browsers.
That's why it exists.
Yeah, there's no reason not to use HTML5, CSS3, or you know, something, you know, that considers other browsers like jQuery or whatever. But there are certain parts of HTML5 that are like gnarly, like animations. It's coming along quickly, but like it's not quite what you're hoping for. And in HTML5 video, there's really recently a big white paper kind of thing rating HTML5 video support. I can't remember where it was. Hopefully I'll find the link and put it in the show notes, but it was it basically just said you can use HTML5 video, but there's some janky parts of it that, and once you've done like an HTML5 video site, you kind of have experienced firsthand how rough it is, but yeah. So those would be the only areas I'd say like use caution: video and animations.
I think Bill, you know, Billy specifically said library, so that's why I went there. But he is correct in that older versions of browsers don't all support JavaScript in the same way. So let's say you want to, you know, select all, I don't know, anchor links that are a subject of or are descendants of a class name, whatever, dot whatever. So you might, in modern JavaScript without a library, in modern browsers, you can use a function called query selector all, and you write a selector that looks like a CSS selector, says dot whatever space A, and get a collection of all of those elements. And that's not going to work in older browsers. And that's why those libraries exist, is to, so that you can write a selector like that and have it work in older browsers. And because specifically query selector all doesn't work in older browsers. Anyway. Thanks, Billy. Check out HTML5, please. It's pretty sweet. I think we got time for one more. What do you say, Dave?
Yeah, should we do this one from Jordan or Evan? I've got two here.
Let's do the... Oh, gosh, now I feel bad for Jordan. I'm sorry. We'll get to you later, Jordan. Let's do the Evan one.
Okay.
Shop Talk Show. I'm Evan Mullins in Atlanta, Georgia. I have a question about source control and your workflow. I'm familiar with SVN and I try to use it when applicable, but everyone seems to be talking about Git. My first couple dabbles into Git and GitHub have been confusing at best. So what makes Git so special? Is it just the social nature of GitHub? And my real question is about source control and workflow. Do you have an SOP that all code is in some repository? What about dev sites, live sites, and even local sites? I've seen super controlled environments where no one touches live code, and it must be tested and then pushed live via an SVN update, as well as very loose environments where people are editing files live via FTP. Is there an industry best practice, or is it all up to personal preference and comfortability? Thanks.
So I think we can break this into two sort of questions. Why is Git the new hotness? And then B, is there best practice for deploying? Discuss.
Shop. Okay. First of all, I want to know all honesty, what does 4to7 Media do for version control? Do you, is it kind of, you know, depends on the project kind of thing? What about the website that you just released? Is it version controlled?
No.
Okay.
It's not. Yeah, it confuses the heck out of us too. I've looked into it a couple of times and my designer brain doesn't follow or understand how it works. And it seems like, to get going with it, it's a huge investment in time and setup, and then it just, I don't know, it seems like just a huge pain to deal with it when I can jump in and make a change in 2 seconds, you know, with FTP or something like that. Sure. So, you know, for us, I mean, we'll develop locally for HTML, CSS, then we'll push it to a dev server while we build out Expression Engine stuff, you know, get it working there, and then move it to the live server. That's usually how we do stuff. Now we do have clients that don't have version control, but we'll have they'll move their whole site over to a dev server and, you know, we'll edit there and then they'll move it back, you know, once we've done changes and things like that. I don't think we have any clients that have version control stuff set up though.
I think that's pretty common in client work kind of environment.
Yeah,
I know we didn't use version control at all last time I worked in kind of the client thing. That was a lot of years ago, though. But now that I work in web app world, absolutely everything is version controlled. And it took that. It took kind of being forced into it for me to be all about it. But I basically don't work on anything anymore that isn't version controlled. And it bugs me sometimes. I'm working on a site right now for like a little project, and it just – ultimately, to go live, I just got to push the stuff up via FTP, right? Like most little websites in the world. And I still feel like, and I would love it if somebody would just write in or whatever and tell me about their FTP-based version control workflow, because that's the hardest part to me, is that now I'm going to version control this thing because that's just what I do. But ultimately, I then have to push it to version control and then probably just go grab those files then and manually FTP them up. And then when I got to make a change, I got to make the change locally, then push it to version control, and then manually copy over the files that I changed to FTP. And it sucks. And I know there's stuff like, specifically deployment, you know, systems that make that better. I found those even more complicated than version control.
Yeah.
Uh,
I would love to have somebody like come over to my place and spend like 2 days with me and get it all set up and show me how to use it. But we haven't had the time to even think about it. You know,
it's not
working
so much
together with two people is what makes it clutch. I feel like if you're two people and you both have to log in and work with FTP, you definitely come across that once in a while. They're like, are you in that file? Get out of it, because I'm going to make a change to it. Because if you're both editing at the same time, it can screw up. And right. And you're certainly not going to email each other and be like, hey, I made a change on line 78 of style.css that is this. So could you go make that change in your local department too? I mean, that's ridiculous. Of course version control is awesome, right?
Now we do. I mean, we have Dropbox, so that's sort of like a poor man's version control, I guess.
It is a bit, yeah.
Because it does keep...
It literally saves old versions and stuff. I find I almost never need to like go back in time. I know that's a selling point of version controls, that you can roll back and stuff like that. I find rolling back like rare-ish. Yeah. What I actually use it for is just the fact that I can just hit pull and get anything that other people I'm working with have done.
Yeah,
that's the real advantage of it to me. So yeah. I have a video called "Let's Suck at GitHub Together" that I'll put in the show notes. That's just like, if you absolutely don't understand Git at all, you can learn from it a little bit. And honestly, I think I use the Tower app in that, which I still really like Tower app. But if you download the Mac app that's just called GitHub, I think, or GitHub for Mac from GitHub, it's even easier than Tower. It's like, you need to know nothing to get this thing to work. You just have a GitHub account. It doesn't even, it even deals with your SSH keys and all that complicated crap for you. It's just really, really easy.
It didn't used to be like that, did it?
No, that's new. Like, okay. Within 6 months. So. Yeah, I feel like all the tutorial, for designers, I feel like source control is difficult, and you know all the tutorials I see, like GitHub for designers, it's like, open up terminal, install this gem, you know, and like, and yeah, it's like, man, you've completely like lost your audience, and you know, so the GitHub for Mac makes it really easy. I think if you are a developer, though, you're kind of like, this thing's getting in the way. I'm a developer, man. But Git is awesome. I love GitHub for all the social things, or all my plugins, my jQuery plugins, and all that stuff. Is I put it up on GitHub because you get just infinity more value from other people looking at your code and helping out. So.
Totally. Just on Fitbids, we get actively, I'd say a couple a week, there's a couple of people that post some kind of totally relevant issue to it. And then at least half the time, they also submit a pull request, which is just amazing. So we have to do no work at all.
Last week, a guy, and I'll pull up his name here, he solved a huge issue. Like, if you hit back buttons in browsers, like videos quit loading, and it was absurd and weird. Jonathan Moore helped out with this, but he just, you know, he spent his afternoon trying to figure out how to fix it, and he did. And it's looking back, it was an easy fix, but I had spent like my whole evening trying to fix it, and I was getting nowhere. But
that was weird news bears.
Anyway, I think the social coding aspect of GitHub is awesome. It brings such quality to every piece of code that's up there. So
here's a tidbit too.
Stuff like
once
that.
You,
use it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Is that, if you're working on an FTP, all FTP based workflow, that means you're not running your site locally probably. Right. So you're like, you don't have an exact local copy of your projects, and that kind of sucks too. And I feel like that's why a lot of times people aren't using preprocessors. And I'm not going to, like, be captain, use a preprocessor or die, because I was totally turned off by those people before I started using them, and it almost made me not want to use it. But now I quite like using a CSS. And, you know, I've tried all of them, whatever, but a lot of those just run, you know, there's like Mac apps and Windows apps and stuff that you can just run that just deal with pre-processing for you. And if you, and that you can only really make use of if you have a local dev environment. So I feel like getting on so version control also can ease the process of you getting on preprocessors too. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hopefully somebody will solve Git for FTP situations. I feel like that is a weak link, you know, because somebody can just hop in FTP, hot change, you know, a file, and it's like, boom, version control is destroyed, you know. So well, hopefully somebody will make that process easier. So,
how can people follow you guys? What's the social stuff? You should go to 47media.com. What's the best way?
There's lots of ways to follow us. If you want to keep up with the company, yeah, 47 Media. We've got a Twitter account, 47M. If you want to keep up with the show, the Kick Awesome Show, is it the Kick Awesome Show or Kick Awesome Show?
I think it's just Twitter. Kick Awesome Show.
Kick Awesome Show has, like, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and we got an iTunes feed and all that kind of stuff. So there's plenty of ways to follow there. YouTube channel.
Cool. We'll link all this stuff up in the thing so people can follow you there. But
or yeah. Actually, if you want to follow us personally, our personal Twitter accounts is probably where you'll get most stuff from. We're Necker47 and Nate Croft.
There you go. Thanks awesome. So much for being on, you guys. It was cool. It's a great work on your site, and it's kind of cool to hear. I like talking to, like, guys that really run an actual design studio, you know, because you're like living the day to day, you know, no more in theoretical crap. This is how it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
You're real world, man. You have the tears of a real life developer.
Real world design tears.
Well, hey, thank you guys so much for coming on and making the first Shop Talk Show crossover episode a total success. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And Chris, you want to play us out here?
No, what do we normally do?
I can't even remember. Well, we don't have a normal. Well,
ShopTalkShow.com.